Welcome to the Red Bearded Predator Podcast, where average folks talk about walleyes, whitetails, Wisconsin outdoors, and beyond.
He looks like a beast. Oh my God.
Are you kidding me?
That's a nice eye.
Yeah. That was a fast one. Holy cow.
We are officially live, guys. All right, I got a guest tonight. Got Robert Loper from Delaware. What do you want me to call you? Rob? Bob? Robert?
Rob's cool, man. That's fine with me. You can call me however you want.
Is that Sammy in the background?
That is Sam in the background. Come here, Sam. Yeah, we're good. This is my daughter, Sam. She's going to kill a slammer this year.
Hey, what's up? You going to kill a monster this year? You going to kill a monster this year? That's the goal? I hope so. Yeah, so I got Rob. He hunts out on the East Coast, but he knows quite a bit about trail cameras, quite a bit how to place them, strategy, and all that sort of thing. I know fairly decent amount. I think, like many, many hunters out there, we've got a lot of our theories from Andre DeQuisto, Dan Infault, the hunting public, pretty much those are the key guys. Joe Rentmeester is another guy that we've learned quite a bit of stuff from. You got any other names that we should drop? Sort of cool.
Andy May, I love that guy.
Dude, Andy May's cool. I like Joe Elsinger. Joe Elsinger has a lot of good stuff on his...
I love another Jersey boy is Bow Hunter Fiend, Greg.
Oh, Greg Litzinger. Yeah, I like his stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, that's just kind of where we're molding our hunting activities. And like I said, I'm in Wisconsin here, so got a couple different areas that we're going to be talking about this evening. So it should be a fun podcast for not only experienced hunters but also new hunters. I know that's kind of the approach that myself and Rob have really geared our channels towards is getting a lot of new hunters just basic knowledge of how to navigate the whitetail woods. So, and we figured a basic trail camera discussion would be a good start before the rest of the season. Hopefully we can get them to come on throughout the season. It would be awesome. So yeah, but well, I guess should we get into it? Trail cameras?
Let's get her done.
All right, right on. I might as well go over, since we primarily hunt public land, what type of trail cameras do you tend to use?
I use trail cameras 100 hours or less. Most of them are about $80 at the most, really, but I do have a couple that are $100. I have one camera that I'm scared to death to put out, and it's an undercover, Lone Wolf Custom Gear Undercover. It's a great camera. Matter of fact, it's right here. I'm scared to death to put it out, man. I really am. It's a great camera. It's got a great mount on it. And I'm trying to look at my picture. Look at you guys. Great camera, man. But they're a high dollar camera, you know. And being a new guy, if somebody new getting into public hunting and want to get into the trail cam game, first thing I would do is go online and see in February, March, see who's got them on sale, blah, blah, blah. Or I'd run to Walmart, grab some Tascos.
Yep.
Myself, in the areas that I hunt, I put my trail cameras out at the end of May and or the beginning of June because there's so many turkey hunters and stuff around here. I'm cheap. I'm scared of losing cameras. So whenever turkey season ends, that's when I get out there. It's quiet, and I try to get my cameras out. And that's by that time they're starting to get some bone on their head.
Yep.
And I let them sit until the end of August, mid of August, and then I go change batteries, change SD cards, and then they sit all season, or at least another 3 months or so. But they're shotgun season, then I go do it again. So, but my cameras are all under $100. I use 8-mans, Bushnells. I have a bunch of 8-mans. I love them. H55s or H70s, I believe the models are. They're great cameras. They have the little view screen inside where you don't have to get down out of the tree and walk by the camera and then go up, pull the card and check and make sure it's pointing at the spot you want it to point at.
Yep.
Which we've done years, it's a pain in the ass. But you open the door on the 8-man and it's looking and you would just adjust it there, put it on and bang. That's my favorite camera myself, 8-mans.
Yeah, I agree with you. If you're new, look at cameras underneath $100. Like Rob said, Toscos, I mean, they're not the best camera out there, but if you're just looking to get an inventory on public land, that's a good start. He recommended the 8-mans. I purchased one last year. I purchased the cheaper grade than what he recommended, but that one seemed to work out really well for me. I like it a little bit more. It's a little bit more expensive. I don't want to call it super expensive. I had success with the Moultries. The Moultries, yep. A25s and the A35s. I think I have a 42. Too bad they discontinued those because I had a lot of success with those. And they're not making them anymore for some reason. So.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they discontinued them. And I was looking at the models from last year. They have really bad reviews, which is surprising because I've really never had issues with Moultries before. So I think I'm going to dive more into the 8-mans. That seems to be what's good on the market right now. I do have a couple more expensive trail cameras that I picked up is the Exodus trail cameras. Those have been really successful. I was able to pick those up on a deal too because I think I won a discount on their Velvet Fest. I entered and they gave me a big discount, so I picked up some of those. Like,
I'm scared to death to put it out in the woods. I love the camera.
Yeah.
It's great. It takes video. It's got Wi-Fi where you can. It actually has a great app where you can do all your mapping and everything on your phone, and then. Check your what's on your camera from your phone on the ground.
Okay.
It's really cool.
Yeah. I think my favorite feature about the Lone Wolf Custom Gear camera is how you can put it on horizontal limbs. That's so cool. That, because there's so many spots like that, isn't there, where you can't find the right tree. And because you and I both hunt fairly thick stuff, especially when we're hunting marshes, it's hard to find a good tree sometimes where you want to put a camera.
It is very tough, and it's sometimes you can't, man. Sometimes you got to put a bunch of brushy trees together with some. I'll go out there and like you say, in the marsh, you're out there and you got them brush trees where you can't get in a tree. I'll take zip ties and tie a bunch of them together and then run the camera like that. I mean, it may move a little bit with the wind, but it's still doing its job, you know, and you just have to, you got to adapt to it.
Another thing that I use, Rob, is, I'm not sure if you've heard of Stick and Pick. They make like sticks that you can put in the ground. And a stick that you put in the ground, it's a metal stick, and you can actually move the height to the height that you want your camera to be at. Maybe I'll bust that out in a little bit here, maybe towards the end. I'll go grab that. But I guess might as well show you. This is the Tosco that we were talking about here. And what I like to do with mine, I'm not sure if you do this with yours, Rob, is I put all sorts of foliage on it.
Put bark on it. My buddy put bark on this one.
Okay. Like bark. Gotcha.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, then on this one, I just bought some stuff from, what do you call it? The Hobby Lobby store, and I zip tie. Yep. Yeah, and that's a good way if you're hanging cameras on public land. I only had one stolen so in 5 years, and I hang them about 8 to 14 feet depending on the location. You do the same. So, and that seems to be working fairly well.
Last year I was hanging them, and I hang them probably from 8 to 14 too myself. I usually do 2 sticks with the bottom on with a little eater, a single eater, and then I reach how far I can.
Okay.
Hang it. But I tell you, man, I've been very fortunate in the last, I've been in the trail camera game 3 or 4 years now, and I was horrible. I'm still learning from it, but last year was a really good year. I really got into it and really did my homework, and you know, I took a lot of information, and I adapted it to my areas, and man, it worked last year. I had some hammers on there, and I do not hunt where I hang my cameras. I will hang my cameras probably 100 to 150 yards away from where I hunt at my specific hunting spots. Which changes all the time too. So, but the reason why I do this, and this is more for a new guy getting into hunting in the trail cam scene, but for some reason, man, the deer they just, and especially the older bucks, and Eric will probably run into this too. They pose back camera and then they're gone.
Yeah.
I swear these cameras that these deer have. And I know they do. They have that hearing like a dog does, where you blow a dog whistle. We can't hear it, but they can.
Yep.
Yeah, something's going on in them trail cameras that they can hear.
Yeah.
They don't like, you know.
No, I agree with you 100% on that, because I just noticed throughout the years, if I don't hang them that 8 to 14 foot level, they say cameras don't click, but there's something in there that they can hear, and I've even put my face really close to the cameras, and there's something there that they're hearing, and I agree with that. That's why I'm like, you just got to hang them up now.
Yeah, and nowadays if you hang them waist high, you better be checking them once every couple of days, because them cameras gonna be gone.
Yeah.
Them up, man.
Yeah, and I do want to say that's pressure dependent is what I've noticed.
Exactly.
I've noticed on areas in Iowa that I've hung cameras in, it doesn't seem like the deer react like they would in northeast Wisconsin or southeastern Wisconsin or Delaware or New Jersey. I'm assuming the same thing.
Yeah. I myself, I was in when I first moved to Delaware in 17, the end of 17, I got into a lease of a farm over, what a mistake, but that's another story, over in Greenwood. Great people, but the guy just, to make a long story short, he just had, he thought he had more than he did, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And it was one of them clubs where it was very strict rules, which I had no problem with, but I hung like 3 trail cameras over there, and it was surrounded by public land.
Okay.
And there were 6 of us. We each got 100 acres, so it was a 600-acre piece. And they still reacted. And I really think what you said earlier, Eric, pressure is everything.
Yeah.
It really does. And if you get out into them areas, like you're saying, like certain places in Iowa, Nebraska, where the population is way down.
Yep.
And they don't know what it is.
Yeah.
So they have nothing to relate to, like danger. Like out here, they're conditioned so much, a strange sound means humans.
Yep.
And the conditioning of these animals are, man, they hear a fart that sounds wrong. It's gone, man. It's crazy.
Yeah. And yeah, speaking of, you know, the pressure thing, I mean, me and my dad during the pre-rut last year made a day and we just drove around in Iowa and we were literally driving right next to deer on roads and they weren't moving. They were just...
You were so close last year, man. I loved that video you sent me. I'm like, oh my God, dude. Yeah. So close.
But anyway, I just want to get into a discussion. We talked about, you know, hanging cameras and whatnot.
Yeah.
Just want to show them kind of what I do. I mean, technically in Wisconsin, you're not supposed to screw in stuff, but I'm not going to lie. The DNR is watching. Yes, I do use the screw in things. Sorry.
Sorry.
Guilty. But yeah, I use these cheap things that you can buy offline. They're like $5 a piece. Seems to work out well for me. So, yeah, and I haven't been, I mean, it's worked fine for me. So you use something like that. You made something on your own, didn't you?
I can't take credit for it, but I used, Garrett Prawl told me what to do. Sent me one of his videos one day, and I'd seen his video, and I said, "What do I need for this?" He sent me a picture of a list of everything I need, and it was like $3.
Yeah,
you know, it's two eye hooks, I can't remember the sizes, but like, of course, with an eye on the bottom, and then. The other one has to be a screw in with an eye on the bottom, and then like I said, a nut and a bolt and a wing nut on the end, so you can turn it and adjust like $2, you know, or $3 at the most, or something like that. So.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't cost a lot to get those things off the ground. So, yeah, that's just a couple. I got mine, two of them from Stick and Pick, HME. You can make your own, not hard to do. And say if you're really worried about, you know, your camera damaging the bark or whatever, or you got the DNR you're worried about, just strap it to the tree, put a little stick behind it, and that'll aim it down for you too. So that's an option as well. So
that's true. I used to make wedges for that, like a
doorstop,
that'll work too. Really good.
Yeah, I could see that working. I never thought about that before. So.
Usually we just grab a twig or something and put it behind.
Yeah. That's what I used to do. Hardest part was always finding the right one to fit behind the camera. Because if it was too small, it'd just break down. And if it were too big, it wouldn't fit. But you had to find that, like, about the size of your finger to get behind there. Yeah, but we might as well discuss how we use cameras throughout the season then. You mentioned earlier that you put yours out. I know you're a little bit more liberal with your camera usage throughout the earlier part of the season or of summer compared to me, myself. I actually don't hang much for cameras till August, September. So
yeah.
If you just want to touch on... kind of how you inventory deer and whatnot, that'd be great.
Sure. What I do is what I've implemented in the last, I did it last year. Last year I implemented this. I hang all my cameras in end of May, beginning of June, because you're going to see horns, and I'm not checking them until middle. I can reference wind, I can reference conditions. This buck is using this area and this specific location. And the reason why I do that is because we have a very, very early season. We have our season opens September 1st. So all these walks are together. So it's very simple. And I don't want to say simple, don't get me wrong. But it's not that hard to pattern these groups of walks going back and forth to wherever they're heading to. Of course, there's crops everywhere here. It's a lot of farmland in Maury. And what I did this year, what I'm implementing this year, is on top of having 14 cameras out in specific areas that I'm hunting, I'm taking rides on the nights that I'm not working and I'm free, and I'm going to glass and fields because I want to know. That matter of fact, the other night I'm on to a good one. It's just fun to do, man.
Yeah.
You know, you can take kids, you can take your wife with you. Let's go look at deer, and you can check. And I'm marking down where is corn, where is beans, because I, for some reason, I like to focus on beans early season and focus my cameras around the beans early season, because I do think that the deer get into in a conditioned way that they know that them beans are only there for a certain time.
Yep.
It makes sense, almost like the acorn, so that it's first come, first serve. Because in my experience with a bean field, once it turns yellow, they seem to gravitate away from it.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if it has anything to do with the acorns falling at the same time or, you know, the tractors are farming. I don't know. But
yeah. I think there's several different factors. I agree with you that there's acorns, but I think another reason that they tend to ditch the beans is because I feel like those leaves lose their moisture.
Yes.
I think that's a reason that they move off those beans too. Another thought is that they might be transitioning to corn that time of year, because that's when it starts to get a little bit chillier too.
It's true.
It's kind of weird because I've seen the same thing. But like we always say in whitetail hunting, there's never an always. I've had instances where I've had maybe a buck or two still hitting beans. So I wouldn't say eliminate beans completely. I would always have it in the back of your mind. If the sign's there, the sign's there. Let the sign tell you what to do. But I would agree that the tendency is to move to acorns as you get towards the middle part of the year. So,
yeah.
But
I think to people, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
That's okay.
I think people like to focus on beans too. And I catch myself doing this. Me and my buddy had this conversation this afternoon, and I do think people like to concentrate on beans because they can see.
Yeah.
I really do think you can capitalize on early season cornfields, but it's tough to see what's there. You know what I mean? To me, it's very easy to see a buck in a cornfield right now compared to mid-August or mid-August. Yeah. And people like to see what they want to go after.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't know. I just think that has something to do with it, too.
You guys have first week of September opener, correct?
Yeah,
where that's a little bit different from Wisconsin, because we're middle of September, where that's that point where you might have a couple of patches of beans left that you can target still, but like that kind of, we missed that entire pattern in Wisconsin, unfortunately, because I got to experience that pattern firsthand last year in North Dakota. And that was super fun. Like, that first week in September, every single bean field was just, I mean, almost every, it was almost every night I was on probably 120 to 160 inch deer every night going to bean fields. Like, it was amazing.
You know, me and you had this conversation too earlier in the year, and, you know, I missed so many opportunities this year because I did not hunt the blinds.
Yeah.
I was pursued by individuals to don't bother.
Yeah.
And I was naive to it, and man, what a mistake. Do not, whoever's listening, new hunters, do not make that mistake. Get your asses out there in the mornings. Get in that tree, man. Do not make that mistake. Bucks move in the morning.
Wait, was that what your trail cameras were telling you too?
No. Oh yes, that too. Yes, was telling me too. But that's something I don't want to really. People were telling me, were coaching me a little bit in certain things. I don't want to go into that.
So, yeah.
You know, one of the big guys was coaching me and telling me to do certain things. And
yeah.
It just worked like that. You know, I don't want to go into that, but trail cameras were telling me because I checked my trail cameras right before the season.
Yeah.
And then I let them sit until probably December after shotgun season or the end of November. So
okay.
I went and got it. It did tell me that, you know.
So, gotcha. So
that mistake, guys. Get your butts up, get up, drag your ass in that tree, get in that tree, man, in early season. It's a great time to hunt, man.
Yeah, I agree with that because – I think you do have to, you can hunt mornings, you just got to be smarter about your access and trying to backdoor the deer. You can't play the deer coming to you. You got to beat them back to their bedding area. That's the key. But going back to, you know, your summer trail camera patterns, are you hanging them on trails, scrapes, mock scrapes?
I try to
field edges.
What's that?
I was just saying mock scrapes, trails, field edges.
I try to hang them either because I'll tell you the why I do this is I hang them wherever I see the most sign.
Okay.
Or like I don't want to say scrapes or rubs. I want to say like big trails, big tracks. You know, maybe a few rubs here and there that are really fresh or ancestral.
Okay. Yep.
Scrape. Only because I don't care about nighttime pigs. If there's a buck at in the morning or in the afternoon or in the middle of the night, I know he's there somewhere. He's probably in within his core area, but he's a ways away. And if I don't know where that buck is bedding by the end of April or so, shame on me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, I'm gonna go to chase the son of a bitch.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, so I just that's how I try to deal with it, you know, and I try to place them in places in high traffic areas.
Yeah.
And I don't put them on field edges ever.
Okay.
Because they'll be gone.
Yeah.
Eyes on the field edges, they'll be gone. If I do something like that, it'll be 50 to 60 yards inside the woods.
Yeah.
You know? On a thick transition or something like that. So.
Yep, I agree with that. Like, I do hang trail cameras every once in a while in the summer, and I try and find, you know, historical primary scrape areas, like Rob said, on areas where you see lots of rubs. Inside, like he said, 50 to 60 yards inside the field. I'd never hang them on a field edge. Just seems like he just wanted to get stolen if you're doing that. So,
oh, man.
Yeah.
It's going to be,
yeah. And I do try and look for bean fields. And another area too that I focus on is CRP fields, because it seems like that's another huge feeding area in the summer because they have all that browse, like flowers.
And bedding.
Yeah.
Forbs, and they bed in that stuff.
Yeah.
So many times, I don't mean cut you off, but there's so many times that I've went in early season to hunt a specific tree in a CRP field, and boom, there it goes. Oh shit, there he goes.
Yeah.
That means under that tree of you know, a whole thing of honeysuckle or a whole thing of jewelweed along the ditch.
Yeah.
Or forbs. You know, any forbs are a great spot to put trail cameras in, a big spot. A big, you know, big area of any kind of forbs, like honeysuckle,
mm-hmm.
or something like that, in the summer, because they love that
Yeah.
That before they go to the main course.
Yeah.
At least he, you know, I mean, they do that here.
Well, yeah. And, everything I've seen was like, there's so much more nutritional value in that CRP crap. Like, they just gravitate towards it in the summer.
Yeah. And, you know, I've been told too that by pretty good guys that know their crap and about deer biology and all that, deer supposedly get 70% of their water from what they eat.
Yeah.
That's what I've been told.
Yeah, I think Jeff Sturgis talked something about like that. Like, he says it's nice to have water sources and watering holes and all that jazz, but he says most of the deer get their moisture from, like you said, plants. And I could see if you're in a drought condition, that can completely change the game. Well, heading into the season, using trail cameras is great, but it's almost like you got to hunt your way in too, because I don't know how many times I've personally been burned where you're like, oh, I got to go in the woods right away. And you go in that first CRP field, there's freaking deer all around you right there. Like, that's happened. I mean, yeah. Last year on Bud's first hunt, I'm not sure if it's a hunt you've seen where he ended up missing out on that doe. He was reading some.
Sure.
Yeah, but he actually hit the doe, but it got deflected. But anyway, Bud was really smart on how he hunted that, because he knew of spots that were deeper, but he's like, it's opening weekend, man. I'm not going to go dive in there right away. And he just read signed in that spot, and he was surrounded by deer, and it's a heavily hunted area. But he just read that sign, and he's like, I'm not going to be stupid and pass this until I hunt this. So,
well, I go, or it happened, going early season, going with trail cam picks and trail cam data. But a lot of my early season are observations. It's not like, oh, I know this guy's coming down the trail.
Yeah.
Where you can go in, and because you know what, man? Shit changes into that.
Yeah.
Week. You got the scent in the woods. There's other guys in there. They change right up.
So yeah.
Here it is, man. They're here.
Yep. You know? Outside of those first 2 days of the season, it's like they turn into a different animal. They really do.
Yeah. They do.
Yep. So, but yeah. But going on to trail camera as we're starting the season, what I do with my cameras is when I put them out, when I want intel for that season specifically, I do not put it anywhere near their bedding. I put it,
gotcha.
I put them on scrapes by field edges. That way I can check it. If it's hot,
yep.
I got deer coming through, I'll sit it. I mean, I might push in a little bit more towards bedding, but I'm always, where I think people have been is where I put my cameras. Is it?
I got.
If that makes sense, because I know that bridge hasn't been burned. So I will, like, that's where I do that 50 to 60 feet off the road or 50 to 60 feet off the field edge. That's what I do. So I can reference whatever pictures I'm getting for that time of year and using all that intel to my advantage.
I don't check my cameras all the time. I know you don't either, but like, I will because no matter, I don't know if it's, it's probably out there like that where you live too, but like where I live, there might be a guy in there opening morning, and then I might be there that night, and then there another guy's there the next night. So there's constantly. And these pieces that I hunt are so small. Our biggest state piece in Delaware is State Forest is only 2,000 acres.
Oh, that's so small. That's real small.
It's very small here. It's so and it makes it really tough
because
there could be so many guys, and it's surround. First off, it's surrounded. Most of it's surrounded by private. So. because a lot of these bucks live on the private. Because first off, they know where hunters are hunting, because most guys that have private property have presets. They're not running gun hunters.
Yeah.
So they skirt around them guys, and there's trail cameras all over the place. Yeah. And it's just, it's tough. It's tough in that way, because even with a trail camera, like we seen, like we were talking about earlier, it alerts them right away, man.
Yeah.
And like, it's, god damn, these guys are tough.
No, and I think, you know, checking trail cameras and whatnot, I think it depends where you're hanging on how many times you can check them. Say if it's right off the road, you can check it every freaking day. Who cares?
Yeah, I agree. Yep.
Like, you can do that, but it feels like the closer you get to bedding, the less you want to, the less you want to check them. So,
I agree, yes.
Yeah, but... That's kind of how personally I use my trail camera for the early season.
Pretty much the same thing. I use some of the data I get, if I get good data.
Yeah.
And try to react.
Yeah.
That's maybe the difference of
Yeah.
But
then we move along towards we're getting to that middle of October. Rut. That's when I hang these trail cameras, you know, like I said, September, August. I'll put them in rut areas. I'll put them in doe bedding areas or areas where there's a primary scrape. I'll put them still close to some buck bedding. I'll actually intrude that in the summer and won't check them the entire year. And I'll actually use annual intelligence to tell me when the does are going in heat in that area. That's primarily how I use trail cameras, like rut time period.
Yeah. I specifically let them, I checked it. I changed the batteries and then I changed the SD card and I let them sit.
Yeah.
For the year until probably the end of December or beginning of December, only because and they're just so small pieces, you know what I mean? And
yep.
Deer are, they're using the same ways, it's just different times, you know what I'm saying? Because if they're using it in a way that have a camera, I'm hunting it, it's usually they're not getting messed with.
Yep.
You are doing all year, and we pretty much know the travel corridors in our areas where he's near.
Yeah.
And get past other hunters.
Yeah.
And I try to stick the cameras in there, and I keep them aerial all year and say, okay, this buck is still alive after shotgun season, and he's using this route again to skirt this guy.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. I think you make a good point, though, is we both put our trail cameras out. If it's going to be in a rut area or if it's going to be in a sensitive area, we don't check them. We put them out and we just use the intelligence for the next year. I mean, say for guys who have cell cameras, that's a huge advantage. Like, I'm not hanging a cell camera on public land. I don't have that type of money. That's where me and Rob are kind of in the same boat. We're just average guys.
I was offered a free cell camera, and I said, listen, man, I thank you so much.
Yeah.
I really appreciate it, but I have to, and I don't want to offend you, but I have to decline because I have nothing against cell cams.
Yeah.
I myself, I just would never use a cell cam. It takes away something that I like to do, that much more that I like to do. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, I'm on the same boat, man.
Yeah, how many advantages do you need?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I'm not downing anybody or saying they're wrong for using them, but like, listen, man, this is a chess match. I love doing this, and Eric, you know as well as everybody, you know, I have a very super very bad depression problem.
Yeah.
This is my therapy, man. I love doing this stuff. It brings a smile on my face, and my family tells me that.
Yeah.
I love it, and you know, there's a lot of people out there that I piss off a lot, but I just say how it is, man.
Yeah.
I tell people how it is, and you know, what I like to do, I would never have a cell can in my arsenal. You know what? I don't want to say never. Don't give me,
never say never.
I doubt I would ever use a cell can.
Yeah.
Unless it's behind my house or something stupid on a preset on a pile, something like that for my kids I set up.
Yeah.
Say, hey Sam, you better get out there tomorrow. That buck's coming in the bait pile. Which I don't do, and I probably wouldn't do.
Yeah. I'm not in, just me personally, I'm not into the cell camera thing. It's just, I think, you know, say if you got a hot dough and there's $4 going through in that day, and I'm like, oh, I got to go hunt that. It takes something away from me. It eliminates some of the mystery. And that's part of the reason I hunt is for the mystery. And that's why I hunt public land too, because it's such an adventure. You'll never know what you'll see. You'll never. But yeah, I think the main thing that we're getting to with the rut portion time period of the year is hang your cameras up for the year and just look at the annual patterns. It's not hard. A lot of guys complicate this stuff. Like, they really complicate it. It's not hard. Everybody talks about you need the wind direction and blah, blah, blah. If you got a bunch of bucks going through on a trail camera that time of year, mark it in your date book. Got to be out to the tree, October 27th.
I agree.
Seriously, that's what I've started doing, and it's really paid off. Last year, I knew specific dates, October 24th through the 31st, and I had three or four encounters with bucks in about a 200-acre area that was just on fire during that time period. After that time period, I sat there a couple more times. We actually had, Bud had a 50-inch four-pointer come through. A 50-inch.
Wow.
Yeah, he was trying to get a shot at it. Big four-pointer. Bud would have shot him. But after that, it turned off. So, I mean, annual patterns, rut. That's all you got to remember. Mark it in your date book.
Yeah, me personally, I agree 100%. Me personally, I hate the rut because I like to try to go after. I'm very bad at it because they're always Eric will agree with me, and we've had this conversation. I am awesome at getting on deer, but I just suck at killing them, man.
Yeah,
I'm always 10 yards, 25 yards off. Man, last year I had so many encounters, but like, dude, I'm not shooting a bow 40 yards. I can't.
Yeah.
You know, and well, I can, but like, I'm just not comfortable. 30 yards, I'm not.
For me, I'm 32 and in. 32 and in. That's put. 32 is my max. I will not go over 32. I can shoot 40, but there's too much that can go wrong. I mean, we can get into that. I mean, that's a whole nother ball of worms that we can get in. Yeah, this is super fun, dude. It's super fun.
Yeah.
But that's how I use them throughout the rut. During gun season, I take all my cameras down. There's deer.
I take them down the end of January.
Yeah. Rob, you made the point that that's the frustrating thing about the rut. Deer's movements are so random, all that stuff. It gets even more random during gun season. It really does. Unless you have one pegged in a sanctuary. Like, I'm like, what's the point of having these trail cameras? So many guys out in the woods. It's just going to get stolen.
Yeah. crazy. And I hung a trail camera last year, and I'm going to tell you right now, it is an old clear cut, and you would think that nobody is in there, man. Nobody.
Yeah.
Well, I just in I think it was in back in March or February, I said, you know what, I got to go through that place, man. I put a couple trail cameras in there last year, and I checked the trail cameras in February. I pulled the trail cameras in. And I'll tell you right now, there was more guys in there than there was out in the open woods. I'm like, holy shit, man, this ain't a bedding area. This is the hangout
I've seen that myself as well. Like, where guys are like, well, we got to go on the thick stuff. We got to put... And I've had encounters with deer and you can see 200 yards in the open hardwoods. That's why there's never always in whitetail hunting. It's so
I when I'm hunting and I'm hunting the rod, especially the rod, because it's I'm probably not after a specific buck. I'm hunting an area in the rod because that specific buck is probably gone, or you might get lucky, blah blah blah. But the areas that I like to put trail cameras in and hunt are, I like side cover.
Yeah.
They feel hid. If that makes sense, side cover.
Yep.
Tall grass, where if you ever watched a buck in a bean field, you could see his horn sticking up and his head's under the beans.
Yeah.
He thinks he's hopping.
Yeah.
He thinks he's hot, but he's not.
You know? Oh, I saw that last year.
Areas I like.
Yeah.
And that's where I'll put my cameras, because there is a lot of areas like that where the bigger mature animals will come through during daylight hours because they feel hid.
Yeah.
It might not be at a destination point. It might be a funnel or something like that, but they still have that side cover to make them feel hid.
Yeah.
I really, really have really bound down on them kind of spots.
Yeah, that makes a good point. Another thing that I've noticed is I've hung two trail cameras in a certain area. I've hung trail cameras on like the main trail, and like I've noticed like kind of a side trail that's not used by as many deer. I've noticed for some reason those mature bucks really stick to that less worn down trail.
It's a little thicker.
A little
darker.
Yep. Yeah, I've experimented with that, and I was scouting a farm that my dad has access to, and there was a buck bedding area, and there was this little trail coming out of there. I was like, Dad, that's a hell of a buck bedding area that we've never realized that's been there. And all these does, he's just cutting those doe trails, and he's actually going down in a valley, so he can actually smell all the thermals coming down at night.
Yeah.
And my dad's actually at the top of that ridge, where we've learned that my dad has to hunt that on kind of an off wind, and it's just a slight trail, and all the biggest rubs were on that trail. It was amazing.
Well, you know, I that's another point, and you know, I probably get off a little bit of truck hunters too, but guys think they always need the wind in their face, and you know, when you're trying to place your stand or place your trail cameras or whatever, you are leaving human scent, and the human scent's going to be there. So you need to have that off wind, especially with these bucks traveling.
Yeah.
And I don't think that these bucks are bedding with, like, say, like, in especially if it's a real flat country.
Yeah.
I do think they want that when they're bedding, they want an obstacle to their back.
Yeah.
And they want somehow that wind in their face side too, or right.
Yeah, it's like a little tornado, a little swirl.
Yeah, big scent.
Yeah.
Because it's all swirled. And it hits that backstop and it just swirls. Yep. So when you're finding them buck beds like that, and you're trying to follow them trails out,
yep,
farther, that's not going to spook them, and whether it's far enough or not, you got to consider them wind and putting your cameras or setting your spots up,
yep,
or whatever, because I'm going to tell tell you right now, all's a big old buck, you know as well as I do. You set a camera up 100 yards away from the buck, and he comes downwind of that camera and catches your scent. Gone.
Yeah.
Baby. That sucker's gone. And
yeah.
He's gone.
Yeah, I won't. You know, if it's something I'm going to be checking, it's not going to be within 500 yards of their bedding area. I think I've seen the juries talk about it. I'm not big into their style just because they have access to, but they said something that a deer can smell about 500, 600 yards or so is what I've heard on a podcast.
Well, according to Dan Enthal, you know, and I love Dan. I respect Dan. And
yep.
Dan's a great guy. Dan stated that a bear can smell a dead carcass up to 10 miles.
Holy cow.
Yes, that's what he states. And a whitetail nose is the second best under a bear in the world.
Oh, wow.
So that's a long ways, man.
Yeah. Maybe that's even further than what I'm thinking, even. Wow. That's
a long way, man. I can't. I don't want to plagiarize myself, or if that's what you want to call it, but that's what I've heard him say. And he's a pretty good bear hunter, man. He kills some bears, you know.
Huh. That's
some deer, so.
That's super interesting. That's super interesting. I suppose I could see it where deer might be able to smell you from that range. But I think the closer you get, the more intense that smell gets.
I agree 100%.
So
there's something there.
Yeah, maybe you're a quarter mile away where they can smell you, but that intensity picks up when you're, you know, 300, 200. You know, it gets to a certain distance where their red flag goes off and being like, this intensity is way too high. I need to get the hell out of here. So
almost like a snap. Almost
yeah.
Like I agree 100%. That makes total sense. Almost like a sound with us. We can sound, you can hear a hammer a mile away.
Yeah.
It gets louder as it comes to you or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Another great example is like a lightning bolt that you see 10 miles off at a distance and you don't hear it till 10 seconds later or whatever. That's a great example too. So,
yes.
Yeah. I've never actually thought about that until now that. Their intensity of the smell could get greater as you get closer.
Yeah.
But, yeah, then I guess we might as well transition to late season. What I do during late season, I just drive fields. I try and find food. I hang up trail cameras on food. Not complicated.
I am pulling cameras mid-January because mid-January, we can hunt till the 31st.
Okay.
But most of the horns are falling off late January.
Yeah.
Most of ours. There's some stragglers. I mean,
yeah.
I have a really good one on camera last year. He held till March, mid-March.
Wow.
That's when I pull my cameras, and then I do what you do. I check my data and info, what happens throughout the year. You know, I might go... depending on the weather and whatever happens,
yeah.
If we have a really windy season that year, I might go change cards and batteries right after shotgun season.
Okay.
Because I asked you if you had this problem earlier in the year. Like, dude, I'm getting like 6,000 pictures of the friggin' trees and this and that.
Yeah.
It's like so annoying.
Yeah. No, that's super annoying. That's super annoying.
Late season, I'm up on a food source. I really do believe that in my area that they want to bed closest to a food source as possible.
Yeah.
With security cover you know, they really can watch through the woods because everything is gone.
Yeah.
And they have that. It's very, very difficult to sneak up on them.
Yeah.
Here. And they have every advantage they can. It's, you know, everything cold and crunchy. The smell is swirling, and the eyes can see a long, long way. So I really think these bigger boys that survive are up on the food.
Yeah, yeah. Yep, I agree with that. Like, yeah, late season, I just, you know, if I'm having activity on a trail camera, since they can see so far because there's not enough foliage, I'll actually I won't sit on a field edge, but I'll be close to it. Because it seems like guys don't want to be out there when it's 10 degrees outside. And I noticed just the pressure goes down and the deer are a lot more willing to show themselves, actually, late season. Yeah.
It's so hungry, you know, it just, there's no browse for them. There's no corpse, there's no browse.
And yeah.
And they eat so much friggin' green briars. Yeah. They need water. They need water that time of year.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's cold, dehydrated.
Yeah, like, I noticed, like, Greg from the Hunting Public did a great thing on that where he hung a trail camera up on a watering hole during winter, and the deer were still going to water even though there was snow on the ground still. Like, that was super interesting to see. But, I hang in. What I do is there's not a lot of food adjacent to public land like late season. I drive till I find food by public. Like, I'll just take a day and just drive, and I'll mark everything that has food adjacent to public.
What kind of food are you looking for? Corn? Are you looking for
corn?
Corn,
beans. I notice red oaks are still, because they don't eat them usually during the season, especially in this part of Wisconsin that I'm hunting up in the Northwoods. It seems like they eat the red oaks a little bit more because there's not as many white earlier in the season. But red oaks, since they don't like them early season, it's something to go to late season, is something that I've known. And another thing that I look for, what type of tree is that that has the pods? Man.
Locust trees.
I look for those too. Yep, that's another thing that I try and look for. So, I mean, that's kind of the food sources that I'm trying to key those deers on.
Yeah,
but
late season is tough. It is a very tough time in the season to hunt.
Yeah,
here because you, in my opinion, you got to be right on top of them.
Yeah.
These bigger animals, they are getting up, and you might have 5 minutes
of
them looking 50 yards and at the last minute.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I do believe that deer get up before dark.
Yeah.
I do believe, too, that they go very little ways.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, it might take them a half an hour to walk 50 yards, you know?
Yeah. No, that makes sense where you're at, especially too, just due to the fact of, I'm not sure in Delaware, how much crops do you guys actually have out there? Do you guys have quite a bit? Delaware, or
All farm fields?
Everywhere.
Bean and corns and a little bit of Milo. You know what Milo
is? Yep, I know what Milo is. But, you know, since it's a smaller area, like, do farmers get their crops out a lot better, like, fairly good compared to a Midwestern state?
The private land is bigger than the public.
Okay.
These guys, they're pretty efficient, man. They're pretty good at the trade, man. They're good. Somebody. Cornfields, they're 10, 12 foot high, man. He's corn.
Yeah.
You know, can't see nothing, dude, you know?
Yeah, so that can make it a lot harder. Like, if they're super efficient and they have super efficient equipment, that can make it very challenging, too. But other than, you know, getting their trail camera pick on a field edge and relating it back to bedding, I pretty much just have it out there for inventory for the next year, then.
Yeah.
Late season. Yeah. So.
I pull them in and I maintenance them. I'll do whatever I gotta do until, the end of January or so. I'll pull them in and, you know, some of them take a crap, some of them don't. So, you know, some of them need batteries and they go back out in May.
Yeah.
You know, May, beginning of June.
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess it's pretty much covers trail cameras throughout the year. I mean, we could go more into detail of, you know, relating pictures back to betting and all that stuff, but I just wanted to get a baseline episode out there just to kind of give a general overview of how we use trail cameras in a couple different states, but it seems like a lot of similar tactics being used.
I think, to be honest with you, I think we're all, most of these guys are into betting and you know, the secret's out on the betting and the buck betting and all that stuff. I think a lot of guys are starting to learn in the last couple of years that actually buck betting isn't the only way to do things.
Yeah. You know,
I think that's pounded in our heads for 7 or 8 years now that we're finally starting to find out. Like I said, it's not the only way. You know?
No.
Yeah.
I think, you know, we can go into more details on that in a future episode. And that was kind of part of the theme of this episode. Never say never and never say always. Like, I've learned that there's many ways to skin a cat. There really is when it comes to whitetail hunting. I don't know. I might as well just bring up a text that I sent one of my buddies the other day, if you don't mind. We were just talking about whitetail hunting, and this is what I said about hunting, because he was talking about how his dad back in the day would just walk in the woods and just still hunt, and I was like, that's my favorite part about deer hunting, is how diversified you can hunt them. You can stalk them, you can ambush them, you can pattern them, you can bump and dump them, you can push them. There's a variety of ways right there besides just betting to skin the cat.
Yeah.
So
there is. I just think that the whole betting theory, don't get me wrong, it's a great theory. I hunt bets too. I think it's gotten guys where, and it's helped. It's put more guys in front of more deer.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. And it's put more guys in front of more deer earlier.
Yeah.
You might see a buck, you know, 10 and a half hour, 10 minutes, 15, whatever, earlier than dark, where guys were watching a black blob before going by.
Yeah.
If that makes sense, you know?
Yeah.
But,
no.
It's definitely an advantage, but, like, you really need to keep an open mind on this, because, Eric, you know as well as anybody, I was a buck bed nut for a few years there. And there was no other way. I'd argue until the cows come home about there's no other way. I learned a big lesson, man. There is more way to skill in a cat. So
yeah, I agree with that. And I feel
got to do what you enjoy.
Yeah.
If you like to stalk them, go stalk them, man. If you like to sit in a tree, go sit in a tree. Yeah, that's my motto now, man. You know.
Yep, I hear you 100% on that. I hear you 100% on that. And I think a lot of new hunters get misled, because I found the buck betting thing about, you know, 7-8 years ago, I was into it pretty hardcore, but I think a lot of newer hunters can't hunt like that. Not saying they can't hunt like that, but I feel like getting a new hunter to go in a mile through cattails is unrealistic. It just is. I'm not sure if you've seen it, where I discuss, hey, this is a saddle. Let's just understand what a saddle is. This is a oxbow in a river. This is how deer travel on it. Like, if you're just trying to deer hunt and get deer, you can still hunt trails, hunt by does, you can still get it done. And there's nothing wrong with killing a 4-point buck. There's nothing, I mean, so if you're new, use like the transitions. Learn all about transitions. Just don't dive. I got to go a mile deep. Like, I think that's where a lot of people are getting misled.
Well, I also think on top of that, I agree 100%. I also think that, and I don't want to blame Dan. Don't get me wrong. I love Dan. But I think a lot of people have gotten into the betting thing, and they're going out and postseason and finding a few or five buck bets. And I really think that they're thinking, oh, I'm going to kill one automatically.
Yeah.
And that's just not the case. Listen, man, these buck beds, if you focus just on buck beds, man, in my honest opinion, especially in my areas, man, you're going to be very, very disappointed.
Yeah.
I just think that you, if you're just getting into hunting and you go out and you find four or five buck beds and you're going to sit them, you're going to be disappointed, man. There's a lot more into it than that, man. And
oh, I agree that with that. Yeah, I'm not going to lie. My hunting that style, my first year or two, I hunted my butt off. And I learned that with hunting buck beds, you still got to expect disappointment. You're not just going to go in there and kill. And I think hunting that way, I missed opportunities because I went past sign because I was just focused so much on a buck bed where the bucks were actually bedded in a different location for that time of year. Like,
timing's everything. It is.
Yeah.
You on the head, timing. Timing is absolutely everything with this stuff, and it is so easy to overthink everything with this stuff.
Yep.
Because you got one channel, and guys watch too many channels, too. I will say that. You're watching this channel, this guy's telling you to do something. You're watching this channel, this guy's telling you to do other thing. And then, you know, you got podcasts, this guy's telling you to do this, blah, 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 blah. It's
like, yep.
Holy, what the hell do I do, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's a great conversation we had last year. I know we're about an hour in here, but that's a great conversation we can have during down the road is like not walking past hot sign, just reading sign. That's all you have to do. And I think I've put personally too much emphasis on my postseason and postseasons where what I'm going to start doing this year is I think it's a great thing that Garrett Prawl started doing it. And I started doing it prior to him stating that he does this. He gets out there at 11, 12 or so, and he just walks. I mean, that I actually started doing that right when he came out with a podcast on that. I'm just walking transitions and just.
You're scouting.
Yep.
Time, so.
Yep.
Yeah, great, man. I really.
Yeah, and that goes back to that. Yep.
Another point, Eric, that these guys, and I agree 100%, but like, I think people get confused about hot sign and reading the hot sign. Well, in my honest opinion, in my experience, you could have hot sign, but that hot sign could be red hot last night at 3 a.m.
Yeah.
You need to decipher whether that red hot sign that you're looking at is going to give you a chance and the timing to get something in front of you.
Yeah.
You could have all the red hot sign up on them field edges or just inside them field edges all day, but it's all nighttime sign.
Yeah.
You really need the right cover, the right areas to in my opinion, to have that red hot sign to have something come through there.
Yeah, and I can actually think of an example where I was burnt on something like that because I was like, it was actually a field edge. There's a pile of sign, and I was like, there's going to be no deer here. There's going to be no deer. Well, I decided to keep on working where I preseason scouted because I was like, oh, there's buck bedding down here. Wouldn't you know it? I get down from my stand. I get to that field edge, and there was buck standing right there, right at gray light. And he was on that field edge. Like, he was bedding. Yeah. Because I actually went in there and scouted right after I seen that. And I was like, that son of a bitch was bedded right next to the field. Like, that's walked within 30 yards of that deer.
Yeah.
Like, that's why I'm like, you can only put, like, Sometimes they do bet on field edges.
I'm talking the majority of the time. Yeah. That's not gonna happen. You know that.
Yeah.
You know, but it does. It does. Yeah. It really does.
So
guys kill buck every year.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah. So it's like it's one of those things. Like, don't eliminate sitting a field edge, even though like we typically don't recommend it. Yeah. Never rule it out. Never rule it out.
I really think it depends on the situation and what's going on. There's a lot of factors in that. You're right. I agree 100%.
Yeah. And I might as well describe the spot. So what it was is there was a road in the valley, and there's actually a ridge like right along the field edge, and it was like just a skinny pinch of timber. The timber was about 60 yards wide, and the deer could actually watch that road and where people were parking from that buffer zone. That's why that deer was bedded up on close to that field edge, because it was just a skinny pinch of timber that nobody hunted, and they could watch all the axes coming in and out. And I knew of bedding on the other side of this property, but I didn't know of that bedding at that time, to where I was like, son of a bitch, that there's bedding right here after I went and scouted it. But I just should have put the clues together, being like, there's sign right here. There might be bedding right there. Might as well hunt it. And I didn't do it because I let my preseason scouting take over. So
what time of year was that?
I believe it was second weekend after the opener. So it was
September.
Yeah, and it was an overlooked chunk that I just from years of watching this chunk, it's a small chunk. Nobody hunts it except for one Amish guy.
I know there's a lot of them here that the Amish we call it the I love them people. They're you know what, they're most giving is people in the world.
Yeah.
The Amish invasion, man. It's like all these Amish people, and it's funny, I don't want to get off track with it. I don't think they have to adhere to certain rules that we do. There's certain ones that don't.
At least here that on public land, they have like their wooden tree stand. Like, yeah, I don't, whatever. I had a great conversation with the guy because I was able to gain a lot of intel from him. He's like, how'd you know about this? I was like, I found it on a map. He's like, nobody hunts here. He's like, I have never seen anyone here. I was like, I found it. He's like, oh, cool. Then he told me when he hunts it. He's like, I hunt it the first week in November. That's it. I was all right. I have a property to myself now, early season.
They're very nice people, man. They really are.
Yeah.
Just like a picture taken.
Yeah. Like, yeah. But, I guess before we get too much on, I guess before we get to on too much of a tangent, we might as well do the would you rather, and then we can shut it down. I thought of a would you rather for you, because that's kind of our MO for our show. So, here's the question. So, would you rather kill a nice, solid 8-point buck, like we're talking 90 to 120 inches, in 25 different states? So 25 different states. A lot of bucks, a lot of states. Or would you rather kill 5 150-inch bucks in 5 different states?
25. That's a bad bitch that does that, man.
20.
I got a buddy that's doing a turkey tour right now. He's killed, I think he's up to 42 states.
Okay.
The Bayside Legion are called.
He's okay.
He was on the walls at advanced auto. But, 25 bucks. I would like to kill 150s.
Yeah.
I've seen them. Like, I like chasing deer, man. I like killing deer.
Okay.
I just like,
okay.
But,
yeah, that's cool. No, I think 25 different states, you're getting so many freaking experiences. Like, I would honestly go with that than 5 150-inch bucks. I mean, My personal goal is like to hunt as many states as possible. It really is. Like, that's why I'm like, I know I got an Iowa tag this year, but I'm hoping to hunt North Dakota next year. Next year is all about traveling for me. I got quite amount of decent vacation coming up. I'd like to make it out east with Robert. I was actually going to talk to you after this episode, seeing if we could get our own public land challenge where we get a group of guys together and just camp and hunt. So yeah, me and you are kind of on the same page on a lot of things here. So that's why I like chatting with this guy. So other than that, I don't have much for this episode. You got any final thoughts for the people out there?
Listen, man, you know, don't get caught up in a lot of the hype out there. Just go enjoy yourself, man. Get out in the woods, get outside, and, you know, try to learn the deer in your area and how they're using it yourself, you know.
Yep.
And take tidbits of tips and pieces of information and try to implement it in your plan, you know.
Yeah.
Don't get caught up on one guy out there trying to mimic one guy or being like this guy. Enjoy yourself.
Yep.
Enjoy what you're doing. Enjoy the woods, you know, and, you know, be safe, man. Everybody be safe.
Yep. I agree with that. And I guess the final thought I'll leave you with is a thought that actually Mark Kenyon had from Wired to Hunt, is that he has all these people on his podcast from all types of different areas, you know, manage guys from Drury to Infault to DeQuisto to Litzinger. Andy May is another great one. He just takes a bunch of information from those guys, whether it's public or private, and uses it for the situation he's hunting. So that's my final thought. Each situation's different. So, you know, like Rob said, learn your situation. I guess that's the cool.